The following is a Raygun-armed, faster-than-light presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
The Time Traveling Robots in Space Podcast starts now.
All right, welcome to episode number 21 of the Time Traveling Robots in Space Podcast for Tuesday. I think I just left out the T in podcast. I think I just said podcast. Did you hear that?
I didn't notice this, but I'm okay with it.
You're okay that we say the word podcast without the T as podcasts? You're fine.
If you want to reinvent the name, that's totally fine. Or to create an entirely new name, that's also fine. I'm down.
Okay. All right. So this is the Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast for Tuesday, February 7th, 2012. This is the show where we talk about time travel, robots, and space. Can you believe that? All three things in one tiny show. That's crazy.
It's amazing is what it is.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
All right. From Wausau, Wisconsin, I am the Inter Dave from Glendale, California, host of the brand new podcast, An Hour of Sleep, Mr. Paul Swickard. How are you, Paul?
I do well, sir. I do well. We're talking about time travel robots in space. So what's not to love?
Exactly.
I mean, seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
Everybody loves you.
No.
So, like, why fight it? You know you want to come back here and do this.
Everybody loves me? Where did you hear this nasty rumor?
It's something I just made up.
Okay.
But it's so – it doesn't make it less true.
Okay.
Actually, it kind of does. Never mind. Moving on.
Yeah, let's move on. All right. For the Spreecast.com viewers, feel free to ask questions throughout the show. Either type them into the chat room or submit them at the bottom right where it says comment or question. And if you have only listened to the show and want to see us do it live, we stream the show. Well, it's Tuesday, but starting next week, we're going to stream the show on Wednesdays. Wednesdays at 9 Central Time, 7 Pacific Time, right here on Spreecast.com. And follow us on Google+, Facebook, and Twitter for all the updates and links as to where you can find us on Spreecast.com. If you're new to the show, the Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast, we do it in a few different sections. We do two stories for time travel, robots in space, and then we do our recommendations and the question of the week. So if you're ready, Paul, I'm ready. Let's get this thing going, huh?
Let's hit it.
Sector 1, time travel.
All right. From Deadline, director Robert Zemeckis is in early talks with writer Bob Geland, film composer Alan Silvestri, about translating their time-traveling movie Back to the Future to the stage, as in a musical version of Back to the Future. Some would agree that the movie, which is packed with wacky gags and hijinks, just might work very well as a full-blown Broadway musical. To date, the franchise has grossed nearly $1 billion worldwide, so the Back to the Future brand is still bankable. The Robert Zemeckis production company Image Movers would be involved if this goes forward. So how do you feel about Back to the Future being transposed into a Broadway musical, Paul?
Not my first reaction is not one of joy. So how to put that? It's probably okay. I guess we'll have to see. I'm not, it doesn't make me hate the series. How about that?
Okay. Fair enough.
And I do agree that, the Back to the Future is still a bankable franchise for sure. Like they just created, like, I think it was Telltale created a series of games that were all the Back to the Future story.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
They did fairly well.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's definitely still I've always loved Back to the Future, and I think the interest is still out there. It's just I don't know if the people who love Back to the Future are going to be the ones who want to go and watch a play about it.
Yeah, good point. And you don't think that this would ruin, you know, they would ruin our childhood by making this into a musical?
Probably not. It's not going to be like, you know, Crystal Skull level bad, if you want to put it in that context.
It always goes back to the Crystal Skull, doesn't it? That's
so. Yeah, I mean, are you a play kind of guy? Is this something you'd want to go to?
I don't know. I like a few musicals, and they're mainly older musicals like The Sound of Music, maybe a little bit of Grease. Let's see, Singing in the Rain. Those kind of older musicals. Nothing too current, so I'm not really sure, and I don't know if I'd have the chance to see it as a Broadway musical, you know? Maybe if they released it on DVD or, you know, some kind of other, you know, in a recorded format fashion of some kind, maybe I'd get a chance to see it, but I don't know. I couldn't see myself, you know, traveling all the way to New York City to Broadway just to see Back to the Future as a musical.
Yeah. I mean, I actively wanted to see the South Park musical, and I'm not about to go to New York for it.
Yeah. No, that one looks really good. Not
the South Park musical, the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, but from the guys that do South Park.
Trey Parker, Matt Stone.
Yeah, something like that, or something like Spamalot. I would love to see the musical Spamalot, because it's a Monty Python thing.
Oh, that was fun. Oh, well, I saw that in Las Vegas.
Okay, cool. So,
and that was definitely worth it. I thought that one was a lot of fun.
Is that just a bunch of their bits made into a musical? Is that how it works?
A lot of it, yeah. I mean, it follows the same plot arc. Okay. You know, they cut out some stuff, but they added a bunch of songs having to do with the jokes, and it worked pretty well.
Okay, cool.
Like, did you ever get into Seinfeld at all?
Yeah, uh-huh.
The television show? Do you recall the character Jay Peterman?
Yes. Very well.
He was Arthur.
Oh, okay.
He was the guy. So, yeah, it was he did a good job. It was a lot of fun.
I have something to relate to that with my recommendation later on. So keep that little nugget of information in mind.
Done.
All right. Time traveling. What do you got for us, Paul?
I have some time traveling tips for you. And this is from a site called NeoBubble. And yeah, it's an older list, but I find it to still be applicable. And basically what they did is they compiled a bunch of different stuff from different people and, you know, gave you this list of basically what to do and what not to do in the case of time travel. And, you know, they're pretty awesome. For example, we'll just go down a bit of a list here. He goes, dig out the photograph of your mother or father when they were young and burn that image into your mind. Do not sleep with them. Don't even kiss them.
I love the paradoxes. That's great. That's part of the advice for time traveling. Know exactly who your relatives look like at a younger age so you don't sleep with them.
Exactly right.
All right. What else?
Check the labels on your clothing. Polyester is highly combustible, and during temporal insertion, ionization, and screaming and burning naked people, do not miss.
You're coming in with a bang, you know, or whatever, or as a flaming human. But I think that would freak him out a little bit, especially
the novelty.
Yeah, the farther back you go,
the novelty wears off.
Yeah. So what else?
There is no need to worry about canceling the milk before you leave, as you can cancel it after you come back before you leave instead.
That is awesome. I like it a lot.
So, yeah, I mean, this is a great list. These are just preparation tips. There's also during and after general health and safety.
Okay.
Group sex with monkeys is safe. But now, but apparently it wasn't always the case. So before you ask, inadvertently spread the worldwide disease.
What? What does that have to do with time travel? Oh, Planet of the Apes. Okay. I got it. I got that. All right.
Welcome back, Dave.
Okay. It takes me a while.
Local knowledge is also important. For example, you can ride a Stegosaurus. I found that to be a good tip. You can ride a Triceratops. Also a good tip. You cannot ride a Velociraptor.
Okay. These are all very valuable pieces of information, because who would think to do the research into something like that, into the kind of dinosaurs that you can actually ride? I mean, it doesn't usually come up in your day-to-day life, but if you are time traveling, that's something that could come in really handy.
Exactly. And one of my personal favorites, just to get this out there, Jack the Ripper is not nearly as tall or interesting as he appears in the brochure. Far better to travel to the other side of the River Thames during the same period and look around for the less well-known but far more enjoyable Gertrude the Giant Streaker.
This is great stuff. So where did you find this again?
This is called Neobubble. And it, like I said, it's an older article, and they took submissions from a bunch of people.
Okay.
Some of them are obviously fake.
Yeah.
But I would imagine some of these are, in fact, real people.
That's priceless, though. I love it. And it doesn't matter. I mean, that stuff is timeless. I mean, time traveling tips, timeless. All right.
It would make sense, wouldn't it? If they were timeless, then would that make them – that's a good question. Would inappropriate time travel tips, being not timeless, be no longer accurate or not as helpful?
No, I think they'd always stay helpful, and I think they'd always stay accurate. I think that you would, I think though that you would have to add on to that list. The more time traveling you did, you would tack on more rules for time traveling. But I don't think you'd ever take away any or make any edits to current ones.
Okay, fair enough.
At least that's my opinion on the whole thing.
All right.
All right, so what's this before we go thing that you have tacked into the document?
Before we go? Oh, no, these are just some – this was the preparation tips for, you know, before you go to your, you know, destination of time travel. This are some of the things that you might want to do.
Okay, man, this is – I can't believe I wasn't following along, because that would have been even better if I was following along with the list, with the document.
You were enchanted. I understand. No worries.
All right. Well, the thing is, I'm not used to you adding a lot of information into the document. You usually just throw the link in and then just refer to the information from the actual page itself. I threw in everything that I'm going to talk about. So you're throwing me off, man. You're throwing me off.
I'm sorry. It helps me out. What can I say? I took a page out of the Dave playbook, and it's working out.
You're trying to become a better podcaster. I admire that.
I always do, man.
All right. Before we continue, we want to let you know that there are many ways that you can get a hold of us and leave us feedback, either be it negative or positive. We'll take either. We've got a voicemail number. It is 805-328-3966. That's a Northern Los Angeles number, by the way. 805-328-3966. You can email us, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Again, that's galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or leave a comment in the comment section of the blog of this podcast at galacticnetcasts.com. All right, from Deadline.com. Was my first story from Deadline, too? Yes, it was. Weird. Okay. Popular site
is
this
good?
Week. Yeah. Dimension Films has hired Matt Lieberman to write the script for their remake of the 1980s film Short Circuit. How awesome is that?
Oh, boy. Nah, read on.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. Let's not judge it yet. All right. Tim Hill from Elvin and Chipmunks will direct the new take on the story about a lab robot that is electrocuted and becomes intelligent. Details are being kept secret, but David Foster, who produced the original, has also been brought on board. A summer 2013 release is planned, with shooting scheduled for the end of this year. So it sounds like they've got some pretty heavy hitters as far as the production team goes, and having David Foster back from the original film doesn't hurt either, I don't think.
David Foster, that's a plus. Yeah, I'm happy to see that he's not, you know, flatly against it. The oven and the chipmunks guy, I'm less excited about that part.
Yeah, do you want to do you want to put that on your resume? I don't know. I'm not really sure.
I wouldn't. I mean, maybe from a like a studio perspective, maybe I'm guessing it made money considering they made a sequel.
Yeah.
But yeah, I Alvin and the Chipmunks is bad. Like the sequel was one of like I think it was like patently one of the worst movies ever made.
Wow, I didn't realize but, that.
Yeah. In any case, you know, I'd be happy to see a remake as long as Steve Guttenberg does a cameo. I'm happy with that. That's okay.
That's the only condition, right? Is that Steve Guttenberg appear in this film? And then you'll go see it?
And Ally Sheedy.
Okay. See, I don't think they're going to do that.
You know,
I don't think they will either. This is going to be an entire new film. It's going to be a reboot, and I can kind of picture it in my head the way it's going to look, although that's probably wrong. How do you think they're going to how do you think this will differ from the original, this movie set in modern day times as opposed to the 1980s version?
A lot of the jokes wouldn't play as well. Like a lot of the jokes were very sort of like, I don't know how to phrase it. Like, they're kind of like Chevy Chase, you know, it's all like physical comedy kind of a deal. I don't know how well that would play nowadays. What I'm thinking about now, actually, now that you mention it, is that they'll probably CG up the robot rather than having the obvious puppets that they had before.
Yep.
So I'm kind of wondering what, like, there are some scenes where they have to have, like, I recall one dancing scene where Ally Sheedy's teaching the robot number 5 how to dance. And I can't help but think that if they just did the CG robot deal, that it wouldn't look kind of weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But I think I'm always of the belief that if the right people get on board, then you can, you know, something that sounds awful can really turn out to be great. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to completely discount it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's at this point, it's anybody's guess. But I do love Short Circuit. It was one of my recommendations.
Yeah, it was.
I'll have to view that again. I'll have to see if it holds up. I'm pretty sure it will. So maybe the jokes will carry over. Okay.
I think they're going to go a darker route with this. I think it's going to be more flashy.
A darker route.
It's going to be more flashy, slick, darker. I think it's going to be more badass. I think it's going to be less. It's going to be less whimsical, and more like serious. Mm. Like I think they'll take a serious tone to this. Maybe not completely serious, but I think it'll be more serious than the original was. And maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that comes from, just from when that film was made, and it seems less serious. I think at the time the movie tried to be serious a little bit, right? I mean, there were some serious undertones to the story.
A little.
Okay.
The ending, for sure. The ending, absolutely.
Maybe
they were really trying to be a tearjerker kind of a deal.
Maybe as time went on, it seemed less and less serious because it was a film that was made in the 1980s, you know? So maybe something with a more modern take will seem more serious, but not really. You know what I mean?
Maybe. Maybe.
Time will tell. It's not going into production till the end of this year. So, and we've 2013 release. So, I'm sure we'll hear more about this before it actually goes into production. All right. So, I like the name of your headline for your story. Crabs inspire cancer removing robots. So, tell us more.
All right. Okay. Before you all jump to conclusions, I'm just talking about like the sea crabs, you know, the ones you see on the shore, nothing else. So just making sure that's clarified. And you know what's funny is
sexual kind.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that I saw this article posted in many, many places, and it was all pretty much the same headline. Crabs inspire cancer removing robot. Crabs inspire cancer removing robot. And it's always like that sort of ambiguous title. So I was like, that's cool. But yeah, in any case, the whole idea is that a couple of physicians in, I think it's Singapore, are developing a miniature robot that looks like a crab that there is so designed to remove tumors from, especially like in stomach cancer.
Okay.
So what would happen is the bot would enter through the patient, obviously they'd be under at this point, but they'd enter through the patient's mouth and go inside their, go actually inside the stomach area. So the surgeon can, you know, electrically actually physically remove the tumor.
Okay.
So he'd be controlling this robot going down the patient's, into the patient's stomach.
Okay, this...
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Before, can I interrupt for a second? Because when you were describing that, the scene from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan came to mind with Chekhov and the other captain from that other ship. When they were discovered, when they were caught by Khan and Khan's men, they had those little crab things put in their helmets, and it went through their ear, not their mouth. But it sounds like the same type of thing. Whereas this, I can just picture that scene in my head, exactly what it looks like, and that's what came to mind when you were describing this. But continue.
Well, I mean, you pretty much got it, and this actually has a lot of benefits for the patients, because it's far less invasive. Like, you're not actually making any incision from the outside. It's all going from, it's all happening inside of you. So in theory, you could do very minor incisions on people in order to get these robots to places that would be much harder to get to if a person were doing it.
Okay.
So yeah, it's really kind of cool. And I, you know, when you think about it and think of how tiny we can get these robots, it really makes it rather impressive. And I was thinking about it, and this could be very beneficial for patients. So yeah, they're saying it's about 3 years away from being commercially available. And not that I meant to gloss over this before, it is being made in Singapore. So
okay.
If you want to go to Singapore to get rid of your cancer, enter at your own risk.
Well, you know, the hospitals and the doctors in other countries are usually ahead of the curve a little bit for some reason. Maybe because their standards are a little bit more laxed. Therefore, they can try more groundbreaking things like this. But going back to, you know, entering the body through the mouth or other orifices, that actually, but this is kind of a step up from the microsurgery they already do, which is a step up from how they used to do surgery, where you would just open up the body, and that causes a lot more, it causes damage to try to fix damage. The less that we can open up body, the better. And I think this is
invasive.
Yeah, this is a huge improvement. I'm encouraged by this. I'm looking forward to seeing where this develops or how it develops.
I was looking for pictures too, and they didn't have any.
Damn it! I bet you it looks like that robot from Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. That would be awesome.
I should have. You know what I should have done? I'll just, in the show notes, we'll put the Wrath of Khan robots in there, and it'll be all good.
Yes, exactly. All right, before we continue on with a Star Trek story coming up, everything that you want to know about this podcast and our other podcasts and everything that we do can be found in what place, Paul? What place do people need to go?
I believe it's called galacticnetcasts.com.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Tell me that's right.
Sweet. Ding, 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 ding. You got it right, man. That's our home. That's our home base. And you can subscribe to this and our other podcasts there, either by clicking the iTunes logo or by filling out the email form. Say you don't want to get an extra app on your phone, or you don't want to hook your phone up to, or your iPod Touch up to iTunes every day to sync to get your new podcasts. You can get a link to the podcast sent to you automatically whenever we post a new episode, and it'll be sent to your email, and then you just click on the link in the email, and that will take you directly to the show. So it's very convenient.
That's pretty awesome.
Also, along the top menu is our links to Google+, Facebook, and Twitter accounts. So say next week when we change days of doing the show live on Spreecast, you'll know ahead of time because we'll tweet that out or put it on our Facebook page. We are, by the way, we're in desperate need of people to like us on Facebook. We've got, and this is probably bad of me to admit, but that's if we have one weakness, that would be one of our weakness is our Facebook page. So please, out of those three things, like us on Facebook. We've got the link on the menu at the website, galacticnetcasts.com. All right.
These men. You pretty much admitted that we're not cool.
Yeah, we are. We're not cool. What made you think that in the first place, Paul?
You know what? I should like us on Facebook. I should, and I shall.
Okay.
And you should, too.
All right. Okay, let's move on.
I know we have more.
Whoa.
Sector 2.
This is just blowing up.
Sector 2. Wow.
All right. Continue.
We're going to do it all over again, folks.
What were you...
Are you ready?
What were you saying?
Nothing.
No.
Nothing. I was making a crack about our Facebook popularity.
No, go... I want you to say what you're going to say because I did all that for naught then. If you don't do... If you don't say what you were going to say, then that was all for nothing.
I am quite sure that we have more than three people that are downloading this show every week.
Yeah, no.
So
you're right.
There you go.
Yes.
And I know that of those people that are listening to us, all of you are on Facebook. So go there now. And you know what? You'll get a cookie.
All right. Not a real cookie. We'll just give you a virtual cookie of some kind. All right. So continuing on with the show.
Space.
Now I'm going to make cookies, Paul. Damn you.
I'm sorry.
All right. So, space. Here we go. From bleedingcool.com, producers Brian Fuller and Brian Singer are teaming up to produce... Who are teaming up to produce a new Munsters TV show called Mockingbird Lane for NBC, are also thinking about joining forces for another attempt to bring Star Trek... back to television. How cool is that?
I have heard wonderful things about this. Tell me more.
All right. Fuller, who has written for Voyager and Deep Space Nine, and both have made attempts to revive the franchise on their own before, but this time they figure two is better than one, you know, power with numbers. Fuller tells Ain't It Cool News that the two Bryans, who have long but separately contemplated a new Star Trek TV series, have discussed the possibility of pooling their resources to make a new corner of Gene Roddenberry's multiverse to the small screen. Hopefully, and this is not what I wrote. This is what the article wrote. It says, hopefully J.J. Abrams will give them the keys to Starfleet headquarters, which makes no sense because he's not in charge of the franchise. Paramount and CBS are in charge of the Star Trek franchise. So...
Unless, that doesn't make any sense. Unless it has something specific to do with Abrams' movie.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't see how he has any special power over it.
Or it could be these people that wrote the article have no idea what the hell they're talking about. That's possible, too.
It could be that.
No, this, I put a story up at galacticnetcast.com probably about 2 months ago about... Back in 2004, 2005, the Brian Singer version of Star Trek that he wanted to produce, I put up a story on the website all about it. So go back, please, to galacticnetcast.com and search for that because it sounds like an interesting premise for the show. Like it takes place, I think, in the year 3000 or the century, the millennium. Whatever that's called, we've moved ahead and gone into the 3000s, all right? And it's been a long time since Starfleet was like at its peak, and it's been kind of slowly going downhill. And I believe they get attacked by some new enemy, and they have to kind of rebuild to protect themselves from this new enemy. I think that's the treatment for his what he had proposed to bring Star Trek back to TV. So it sounds pretty cool, at least what Brian Singer wanted to do with it. And maybe that's part of their plan as well.
I hope so. I mean, this sounds incredible, and I would love to see what Abrams can do with it. But this is wonderful news if it goes through.
Mm-hmm. And these two guys together are pretty I mean, Brian Singer has been involved with some pretty high-profile stuff. He was or is one of the producers on House, I believe.
Yeah, he produces a lot of stuff.
Yeah. He was involved in which X-Men movie? Was it the first one?
He was involved in both the first and second one.
Okay.
And had nothing to do with the third.
Okay. And he's been in some other, but he's been involved with some other stuff. Brian Fuller, on the other hand, he has done a lot of Star Trek already. So he's got the Star Trek cred, and he's done other things too. And I don't have that as part of the article, but Fuller's been involved with some movie stuff as well. So I'm encouraged by this news. Pushing Daisies. Thank you, Inertia. I appreciate that.
Me too. I am definitely excited. I hope this goes through. I think people are ready for another Star Trek series on television. I think people want it. I think it's a good time.
And I think we've talked about this before, but I don't think it'll happen until after the second movie is released. If they do anything
probably not.
Television related, I don't think they'll do it until after 2013 sometime. And, you know, that's probably a good thing because that way the franchise, there'll be more excitement for the franchise. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, all that really does is serve to make me want the movie to come out sooner.
Yeah, it's going to be a long wait. I mean, it's not going to be released till next summer, and that's a long way away. So, all right, let's continue on. What do you got for us?
I am going to read you an article that once again proves that a bunch of kids are smarter than you and me. So two teens they're both 17 years old from Canada, had sent a Lego man into space for $400.
Wow.
So essentially what it's pretty cool. So they had made launched a homemade balloon carrying a Lego passenger up with four cameras on the little craft they had. And it fell back down to Earth about 97 minutes later and took some footage that is estimated to be 24 kilometers above sea level, which is about three times the typical distance of a commercial aircraft, the cruising altitude of a commercial aircraft. So, yeah. And if you look at some of these pictures, they're pretty sweet. Like the one associated with this particular article has a downward perspective of the Lego man holding a flag, and you can see the Earth behind him. And it's really, really cool. So based on their own calculations, they had climbed, the craft had climbed about 80,000 feet in 1 hour and 5 minutes. And then the balloon exploded and the poor Lego man was sent to his doom.
I feel sorry for that guy.
Yeah. He was falling for 32 minutes, he said.
Wow. He looks so happy in that picture. He looks so happy to be up in space in that picture.
He's stoked, man. It's pretty awesome. But yeah, all told, they uploaded two videos and took about 1,500 photos. And yeah, these kids are good for them, is all I have to say about that. That is an awesome science project right there.
So Canada finally makes it to space. Congratulations, Canada. You're more than just America's hat. You're more than just the U.S.'s hat. Congratulations.
How many years? Too late? 40?
Yeah. No, these are pretty cool. I've seen a lot of these videos. There's more and more people doing this thing, sending a balloon into space. And every time they do it, there's a new video, and it's always equally as cool to look at. So, awesome, man.
Well, it's always kids. That's what just gets me every time. Like, Dave and I, we research these stories, and more often than not, these projects are done by just these teenage kids who say, hey, wouldn't it be awesome to make this balloon go into space? Hey, wouldn't it be awesome to make this robot? Hey, wouldn't it be awesome to make this time travel device? It's just
Okay, wait a second. Do we want teenagers making time travel devices? I mean, honestly.
No. No. No child should have that kind of power.
Because they're going to go back.
It's going to happen, though.
They're going to go back and change the law, change something that's in their favor, to make something in their favor. You know?
I can think of a couple things that teenagers might want to change. Yeah,
like the legalization of marijuana or something like that.
That was my first thought, actually, yep. Yeah.
Okay, Inertia says,
I know. Thank you, Inertia.
Me as a teen equals wouldn't be awesome to bake a tortilla pie cake. Yes, exactly what we were talking about.
I totally hear you. All right. Mine. See that? Okay, that implies a level of creativity. Like you have, you are actually doing something. Me, I'd be like, hey, wouldn't it be? We should play like a video game or something.
Yeah. No, that's something that if a kid were to go back in time, the kid would probably be smart enough to invest in some video game maker, you know, or something that they're really interested in. They'd probably take their money, their babysitting money, go back in time, invest in stocks for like whatever video game company or video game period, you know, and make a bunch of money, you know?
So on a similar note, I've been watching Friday Night Lights.
I have too.
And the joke was, yeah, it's weird the way that went down. Like when you said that, I was like, oh, that's creepy. Like, wow.
How far are you?
So anyway.
How far are you?
We are in season, we just started season 3.
Oh, see, I've only gotten to season 2, episode 3, I think. It's taking forever because I'm so used to watching British TV shows whose seasons are a lot shorter, and these freaking American shows, the seasons are 23 episodes long. So it takes forever.
I hear you. Well, I checked, and the second season's only like 15 episodes.
Okay.
And then the other three following that are only 13.
Okay.
So, yeah. Just know that one.
Okay. So, anyway, you were saying.
The joke was that some girl was doing her algebra homework, and she said that she's like, I want to go back in time and kill the man who invented algebra. And the, you know, this really smart kid goes back to her and says, you know, that's kind of ironic considering that you'd probably need algebra in order to make the time travel capable of going back in time to kill the guy.
That was Tyra and what's that dopey kid's name?
Is Landon.
Yeah, Landon. I love Landon.
Or not, yeah.
Landon.
Or Lance.
Yeah. All right, so that's enough with space. I think we covered that, right? We're all good?
We're all good with space, man. Spaced out.
Spaced out. Okay, before we continue and get more spaced out, did you know, Paul, that there is a different way of listening to this and other podcasts? Did you know that?
A different way, you say?
Yes.
I'm intrigued yet suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. Everything will be all right. This is perfectly right. On the up and up. No, what you all do, right. Instead of downloading, the pain in the ass downloading a podcast, which nobody likes to do, nobody likes to hook up their iPhone or their iDevice or anything else to the computer just to get a podcast. With Stitcher Smart Radio, you download an app, put it onto your phone, and then wham, bam, whenever there's a new episode, it comes to your device magically. I'm all excited. I can't even talk. The podcasts just stream over your phone. They don't download. They don't use valuable space on your device. They just stream over the app on your phone or whatever device you're using, be it an iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, WebOS, any of those. You can get the app and go to stitcher.com/GalacticNetcasts and enter the promo code GalacticNetcasts for a chance to win a $100 cash card.
See, this sounds like voodoo magic that I just don't trust.
Voodoo magic.
What are we going to, like, dance around like a totem pole and pray to some abstract god? Is that what you're going to make me do next?
Yes. That'll be next week. So get ready for that.
Live, you're going to watch you are definitely going to watch the live show for that one.
By the way, I was supposed to watch the movies that we talked about last week.
Did you not do this?
No, I didn't do my
Matrix.
And I have to blame Friday Night Lights for this because I spent the whole damn weekend watching Friday Night Lights and did not get a chance to watch any of the Matrix. But we will continue that challenge probably for next week. So I will watch the first Matrix and report back to you. So
I hope that happens.
It will eventually, sooner rather than later, I'm sure. So recommendations this week. My recommendation is the 2001 novel Ready Player One. Are you familiar with this, Paul?
I am not.
Okay, but you're going to be in a second.
Tell me.
I'm going to school you, man. It's by the author is Ernest Klein, the man who brought us the film Fanboys. The book is part quest novel, part love story, and part virtual space opera set in a universe where spell-slinging mages battle giant Japanese robots, entire planets are inspired by Blade Runner, and flying DeLoreans achieve light speed. Are you intrigued?
I am intrigued once again, and less suspicious than before. Go on.
Okay, good. And this is, I got this directly out of the, or off the publisher's website. So if this sounds written, it is because it is written. It's written by the publishers. So, in the year 2044, or it's the year 2044, and the real world is an ugly place. Like most of humanity, Wade Watts escapes his grim surroundings by spending his waking hours jacked into the Oasis, a sprawling virtual utopia that lets you be anything you want to be, a place where you can live and play and fall in love on any of 10,000 planets. And like most of humanity, Wade dreams of being the one to discover the ultimate lottery ticket that lies concealed within this virtual world. For somewhere inside this giant network playground, Oasis creator James Halliday has hidden a series of fiendish puzzles that will yield massive fortune and remarkable power to whomever can unlock them. Now, for years, millions have struggled fruitlessly to attain this prize, knowing only that Halliday's riddles are based in the pop culture he loved, that of the late 20th century. And for years, millions have found this quest. What's that?
Sorry, go ahead. Okay. I was like, tie-in that the reader can relate to.
You're breaking my concentration, man.
Sorry.
I'm on a roll here.
No, absolutely. Yes, I'm intrigued. Oasis and these fiendish riddles. Go
okay.
on.
So basically, okay, I'm going to break it down in my own words here. Basically, Wade becomes one of many people trying to find these Easter eggs. There's a bunch of Easter eggs scattered throughout this virtual world, and you have to know this James Halliday's background to figure out these from the clues that you find. You have to figure out they're made up of pop culture references basically from the mid-70s into the 90s and mostly in the 80s, I want to say. There's a ton of like 80s movie references and 80s song references and 80s video game references. Like there's one scene where he has to play out the entire we talked about Monty Python and the Holy Grail. He has to play out the entire Monty Python and the Holy Grail word for word in order to get the next clue, to get the next Easter egg, to win the ultimate prize. And the ultimate prize is ownership of the company that runs and created the Oasis and all the money. If you were born, if you grew up in the 80s or know 80s pop culture stuff, you know, if you're familiar with it, you will love this book. I listened to the audiobook version, which was narrated by Will Wheaton. And it's funny because there's
did he do an okay job?
He did a great job. And there's a part in the book where he actually makes reference to his character from Star Trek The Next Generation, which is a weird like meta thing. You know, it's like he's talking about somebody that he played in the show Star Trek. There's some great Highlander references in this. So it's like if you know anything about the 80s and the movies and the music and the games, you'll love this book. I highly recommend it. I give it 5 out of 5 stars.
Wow.
Yes.
Alrighty then. Okay. All right. So yeah, and apparently the audio version is worth looking into as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not a gamer at all.
I like audiobooks.
And it kind of
okay.
I'm not a gamer at all, and it kind of made me want to go back and play some of these older games because every single major game from the 1980s is mentioned in this book. You know, like Galaga, Pac-Man, Asteroids, you know, all these classic arcade games are mentioned in this book. So, yeah, you have to read it, man.
Okay. All right. Good to know. And the book title is, what is it?
Ready Player One. Ready Player One.
Awesome. I will put that in my queue.
All right. So what's your recommendation?
So this is the first anime film that I have recommended on this show. So, Dave, I don't know if you're familiar with the anime type of film. Yes, no, maybe?
I am.
Okay. This is called Appleseed. And essentially it is a story in which you have a post-apocalyptic society, but everything surrounding this one major city is apocalyptic. They have sort of one utopia, as it were, of people. And in that society, you have both normal people and what they are calling bioroids, which is essentially a human hybrid kind of person with robotics. So, yeah, I definitely a lot of fun. It's very like, I mean, there's really no better way to say it. It's very anime. It's very Japanese. You have a lot of philosophical references. You have a lot of religious context. A lot of the people's names are based on Greek myths. You also have like the just sort of like, you know, impending doom to all of humanity. And yeah, but if you are at all interested in sort of that sort in that kind of genre, it has very large, scary robots. It has, you know, it has a little bit of, you know, space element to it, but it is quite a bit of fun, and it's definitely worth checking out.
Like what form does it come in? Like, is it a TV show or is it something you have to read or what?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, this is a film.
Okay.
This is a movie, a standalone movie. Sorry.
It's all right.
All right. Yeah. Movie. There we go.
Is it?
And yes, and it did spawn a sequel.
Okay.
And I haven't seen it yet, but I want to.
Is the original, is that available like on Netflix or something like that?
It is available on Netflix, and it's a fairly recent film. It was made in 2004, so it's, yeah, definitely a lot of fun. Just so everybody knows, as with all anime, it is much better to watch it in subtitles than it is to try and listen to that stupid dubbing.
Okay, good to know. You know, this is something that I saw, I passed by, I'm sure. Now that I'm looking at it, it is definitely something I've seen before. You know, but I'm like, it doesn't look very good. But you recommended it, and it's rated R, which is awesome. So I'm definitely going to add that to my Netflix instant queue.
Yeah, the subjects they deal with are kind of heavy,
yeah.
And there's a lot of action-oriented type scenes that have to do, you know, it's military-type stuff, a good portion of it anyway. So, yeah, it's not, you know, crazy, but it deserves its rating.
No, I discovered that a lot of the Japanese anime is a lot more adult than you'd think. You know,
Yes, and more often than not, and it absolutely is.
It gets pretty risque. Like, there's, I forget the name of it, but I got talked into watching some anime on Netflix last year, and I could not believe how much sex was in it. Like, I was blown away at how much sex was in this anime. I'm like, this is, it's a cartoon, and they're doing it. What's... I was confused.
You know, if this were a clip show, I would have wanted to capture that, and that would be a regular on my soundboard right there. They're cartoons, and they're doing it.
Well, I've got the audio, so maybe I'll take it out, and we'll save it for later. All right, so
yeah, the it is called Appleseed. Check it out; it's on Netflix, and yeah, enjoy.
Okay, before we do the question of the week, we would like to remind you that if you feel that we're worthy enough, we have a way for you to donate to this show and to Galactic Netcasts. Just go to galacticnetcasts.com, click on the donate button, and all we ask for is a dollar or two. Doesn't have to be anything too extravagant. So again, go to galacticnetcasts.com and click on donate. So the question of the week, are you ready, Paul?
No, I'm not. We need to talk about the donate thing for just a second.
Okay. All right.
And okay. For most people, I will absolutely agree with Dave. For most people, $1 or $2, that's totally fine. Unless your name is, I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg. And if in a drunken stupor one night you just decide to give us half a percent of your wealth, I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that. But that's all I wanted to say. Moving on.
But you have to realize that Mark Zuckerberg has to find out about us, and that's probably not going to happen.
Hey, man, we're on the Facebook now. He reads every page.
Oh, so Mark Zuckerberg is just like jacked into Facebook, and he's like, it's like consciousness for him. It feeds into his brain everything that happens on Facebook.
That actually wouldn't surprise me.
So Mark Zuckerberg is actually an android of some kind.
Or a deity of some kind. Who knows?
A god? He's a god.
Or maybe, I don't know.
Or Inertia says it's the Matrix.
What defines a god? Like, yeah. Is it superhuman powers? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I'm a philosophy guy. These are the questions we have to ask ourselves.
Okay, let's not go down this road because it's going to...
Sorry.
It's going to totally throw us off, and it's going to be the longest podcast ever. So, this is
question of the week, sir.
We'll talk about we'll approach the subject of if Mark Zuckerberg is a deity of some kind or a robot on a later date. I promise.
Sweet.
All right. So today's question of the week, or this week's question of the week: what's your favorite animated robot, and why? Paul Swickard, I'm going to let you go first.
Bender. Futurama.
Yes.
Enough said.
Okay. That's all you're going to say about that?
Bender is amazing. He's the best animated robot. You know, I went through the list. I was thinking, I'm like, okay, do I want to do the Iron Giant thing? I really love that guy. But we just talked about that. There's a character named Briorios in the Appleseed movie. He's pretty badass. Of course, you have the new Transformers movie. A lot of them are pretty cool, at least, you know, cool looking. But yeah, Bender wins. I God bless him. He wants to kill all humans, and you know what? I don't think I could stop him.
You know, this is kind of off your subject, what you're talking about here, but you mentioned all the Japanese like anime robots and stuff. And I just came to the conclusion that the Japanese make the best robots.
That's true. They make some pretty awesome robots.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, take your, you know, entertainment medium. Film, television, video games, all amazing robots.
And Transformers, is that originally a Japanese thing? Or was that American originally?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. But you have others. I mean, some fairly famous robots, Dave.
Like my
answer. What would be your? Yeah, what would your favorite robot animated robot be?
Well, Paul Swickard, my answer to this week's question, what's my favorite animated robot, would have to be Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
I love that you put that in there. That's awesome.
I just think it's cool how a bunch of different parts who can act like separately from each other can come together and become this powerful force. All the different variations of Voltron are pretty cool too. And they weren't done on purpose. At least the first two seasons weren't supposed to be connected. It's just that these were two separate Japanese shows that they made as one show for American audiences. And the second version, did you not know that?
No. Yeah. No, I remember watching Voltron as a kid, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. They were two separate Japanese shows, but they made them as two seasons of this show called Voltron for American audiences. And my favorite is the second season, which is the Galaxy Alliances. This is how it goes, the second season of Voltron. It's in which the Galaxy Alliance's home planets have become overcrowded, and a fleet of explorers have to be sent out to search for new planets to colonize. Yes. Along the way, they attract the attention of the evil Drool Empire, which proceed to interfere with the mission of the explorers and the colonists. Since the Voltron of the planet Eris is too far away, that's the original Voltron from the first season where they're on that one planet. That was the first season of Voltron. So this is how they connect the two. Since that Voltron is too far away to help the explorers, a totally new Voltron is constructed to battle the Drool threat. The Voltron team consisted of 15 members who were divided into three teams of five, known respectively as land, sea, and air teams. Each team could also combine their vehicles into a bigger machine, which each combined vehicle differing amongst the three teams. When necessary, all 15 vehicles combined to form the mighty Voltron.
Oh my, that's a lot of robots.
Yeah, it is. See, that's one reason. That's one reason why the second season A Voltron is superior over the first season. Paul Swickard, your turn.
I agree.
Okay. No, you were going to say something about the first season. Weren't you?
No, not at all. I only ever saw Voltron as like five robots.
Okay.
I never saw the Uber 15 robot thingy.
Yeah, go back onto YouTube. I'm sure you can find clips, if not full seasons or full episodes of the second season of Voltron, and check it out.
Okay. All right.
If you have an answer to this week's question, your favorite animated robot, please leave it in the blog comments section of this episode at galacticnetcast.com. You can also leave us feedback by calling 805-328-3966 or email us GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. So that's going to do it for episode 21 of the Time Traveling Robots and Space Podcast. Any final words? Any final thoughts, Paul?
Be excellent to each other.
And make sure that you subscribe to An Hour of Sleep Podcast.
Oh, yes, that's right. An Hour of Sleep, where we talk about pretty much the silliest news stories on the web.
I was going to ask you to describe the podcast, but you just did. So you beat me to it.
It is. So think of it as, I've heard it described as kind of like a hybrid between the Daily Show and like the SNL skit news thing.
Okay.
So yeah, we're just talking about very silly, very, very silly things.
Awesome.
And by the way, when I say I've heard it described that way, that was me saying it before describing it that way.
Okay. So you're describing something that you described before.
That's exactly right.
All right. So that's An Hour of Sleep. Look for it in iTunes, and we'll look for you next week. Until then, we'll see you, Paul.
See ya.
This has been a presentation of Galactic Netcasts. To subscribe to this and our other podcasts, go to galacticnetcasts.com.